Oh, and one final thing that drives me crazy, and we'll just leave it at this. So now everyone else can notice this in movies and it drive them crazy also, are these high-cut ballistic helmets that never have ear pro.
Oh, yes.
Are you kidding me?
Oh, dude, we've been talking for so long already today that I have a list of topics or a topic that I want to dive into with you, and you don't know what this topic is yet.
I don't, and I'm very nervous.
But we also have so many other things that we could talk about. I'm tempted to just not even go with this. Do we go with...
This is like a first date. I'm nervous and excited at the same time. I don't know where this is going
to
go.
It's not very often. Like, it's not very often I get to see you like that.
Could be really good or it could be really bad.
I know. I'm not sure how you're going to react either.
So where are we going?
What are you thinking, Nick? It's going to be good?
Okay.
All right. All right. Okay.
Where are you taking me?
So...
What time are you picking me up?
I'll open the car door for you with this first question. When the newest iteration of Modern Warfare 2 came out, off the top of your head, what were some of the biggest issues with the gunplay or gear that was in or maybe missing from the video game? Now, before the game ever came out, we saw, you know, the trailer. Everyone saw a trailer for Modern Warfare 2 and the we're going to rebuild it because arguably, in my mind, it's the greatest video game that was ever made. But what was wrong with it?
Well, oi. Right.
you need a boonie cap for this.
Yeah, I could actually shave my beard and it would look just like Captain Price's.
You should.
Minus all the muscles. The first mission was freaking sick. It was an amazing, awesome, well-scripted mission. The problem was, the glaring problem right off the bat was how we were all running night vision. Everyone has night vision. And when you ADS, when you aim down scope or aim down sight, in this case, we were aiming down scope. We were aiming down a normal, like, it was not an actual night vision scope. It was just a normal scope and had perfect clarity, no focus distortion, nothing. It's like, and in real life, when you shoot through night vision, you either use a red dot or you aim passive, or you aim with like a laser. You can't even get your tubes behind a scope because of how far back the scope sits. You can't get it at the angle to see through. Like, think about how hard it is to look through a scope in the first place.
Mm-hmm. It takes practice.
You have to get your eye in the perfect spot, right? So you add nods into the equation. It's like, the first of all, it's never going to happen.
Sure.
Even if you could see well through a scope, you're just not going to be able to get your eye. You're not going to be able to get your tube on that same plane as the eye.
Right.
But on top of that, when you look through the scope and it's night vision, it's and there's no, like, you can see infinity and up close. It was just dumb. So that was so stupid. On top of the fact that and I understand for the game purposes, you needed some sort of illumination around you or else you couldn't see where you were going to go or where you were going. But it was as if there was, if you were to take the camera. So when you're looking first person, through night vision on that game, everything around you is illuminated as if you had a 360 illumination, like, light on you.
Right.
And if you were to take, if you were to go, like, into the dev side of it and go from first person and zoom out to third person above your character, you could see where the developers put in a global light above your head that constantly shined in front of you. So that you could see what you were doing.
It's as if you had like a light that was on your head that was illuminating everything.
Yes, that was the biggest thing, is just aiming passive through a scope and perfect night vision everywhere.
The other thing is a bunch of those guys were running irons.
Yes.
Have you ever tried to shoot with irons under nods?
Yes.
Like rifle irons? Because I've done pistol with like tritium inside the irons for a pistol, but...
I've done rifle irons with a super cheap, like crappy front sight post that had a tritium dot on it. And you can kind of see it, but still it's just like it's so far out there in front of you. You're just... It's awful.
Sure.
It's completely unusable.
Yeah.
And I think you're running an MP7 with irons in that game.
Oh,
on top of that... Oh, man. You got me going. On top of that... the way that the weapons are set up, it's like 99.9% of people that play Call of Duty will never notice that, will never notice this. But like on the MP7, when you're running through that first mission and you go to aim up and you actually use your laser, which is appropriate. The laser's over here on this right side. There's no pressure pad. So, like, if I was actually going to activate it, I'd have to bring my hand over, like, click the button, and it just automatically turns on whenever you ADS. So, yeah, just lots of little things just like that.
Lack of understanding.
Yeah. I mean, I still had fun.
Oh, for sure.
It's, you know.
Do you get sucked into a video game or any storyline more when the guns, gear, gadgets, SOPs, TTPs, everything involved is legit?
Oh, absolutely.
So what percent, if you're like, well, that's about 10% of incorrect, but it adds to the storyline, do you accept?
Okay, so I become more invested into the storyline whenever there's no break in immersion. So take Terminal List, for example. There's still a lot of like little subtleties about Terminal List that aren't the greatest.
Like the part where he was throwing, sorry to cut you off, the one that comes to my mind is when he's throwing 9-volt batteries.
Yes.
And there's like thermal ahead and they're like, oh, we see him moving. And he's just like hucking 9-volt batteries that are plugged into like tinfoil.
Yeah. And, he's moving through trees too.
Right.
And keep him like, we have a thermal drone.
Right.
We know what it looks like to try and observe body heat through
tree cover,
even single canopy. Like once you add in like double or triple canopy, you can't see crap, dude. You can't see anything. No. So, the 9-volt battery thing was funny. Like it was, I actually thought it was a cool element to the story, and I'm willing to like, if there's a couple little things like that where they take like creative liberties for the sake of the story, I'm okay with it. But yeah, it's just kind of.
But you do have to admit that none of that was in the original Jack Carr book.
No, it wasn't.
And, you know, well done to another Navy SEAL who wrote a book who didn't over-embellish. He actually dove in and understood how some of that stuff works. Whatever we're talking about, the guns, the gear, the night vision, everyday carry, the pistol that he's going to carry, what holster he has with it, the lights, the optics. And sometimes, you know, like, for example, very notoriously, J.R.R. Tolkien can talk about a rock in The Lord of the Rings for 5 pages, and it goes way too far.
Yeah.
Well, Jack Carr did a phenomenal job telling a storyline where he just used the items that added to the story, but he didn't go too far. And it's crazy how Hollywood can take a book that is so good, that is so on the nose, and that the target market, probably people like you, Nick, and I, who read that book or those books now, they can then take the same target market and shift some of the storyline or shift some of what it is that the main character or the bad guys or whoever are going to be doing. And quickly for me, yeah, same. The Terminal List, fantastic TV show, even better book, because I felt more immersed into the storyline because it was legit.
Yeah. So, and two things on that. Number one is there are certain stories that I'm willing to buy in, even though it's completely ridiculous. So take like Mission Impossible movies. There's a lot of wild stuff, but that's kind of the thing, right?
Right.
In a way, those movies are kind of science fiction-y in that they're using tech that, I don't know, maybe it does exist. We could get into the whole alien discussion if you want.
Oh, man.
But what gets me, though, is in, like, take the James Bond series. Whenever I was a kid, I didn't notice all the things that were wrong about how James Bond was handling a weapon or, like, whether or not the gadgets were realistic. As I got older, I would say probably by the time I was 9, which is actually pretty young, I was just like, oh, yeah, the way that Roger Moore held a pistol as opposed to the way that Timothy Dalton held it, like, not legit.
Oh, my gosh.
So, but, that's what gets me now whenever I watch a Bond film. Like, what was the last one? Not Skyfall, but Nick, what was that last one? Jamie, pull that up. I can't remember, but it was the climax of his story arc.
Right.
And it's really funny because like they'll have like some cool guns, but James Bond, who is, you know, a 00 agent, he has the best that the world has to offer. You know, he's got these crazy, like, you know, he has a multi-million-dollar pin grenade, and yet he can't get an optic on his, like, sub gun. Doesn't make it just so stupid.
Right.
But in the last Bond, I felt like that was probably the best iteration of, that was probably the best Bond movie in terms of gunplay, and still they got it a lot wrong, and it's, It's when the skill set doesn't match the character.
Oh, that's
that
good
it
point.
Really drives me crazy.
Yep.
So James Bond, supposedly highly trained, you know, tip of the spear kind of guy, and yet he can't hold a pistol correctly.
Right.
He can't shoot a rifle correctly.
Yep.
I can get over the rifle setup because great shooters can shoot just about anything. Sure. I mean, you and I, even though we're not like great shooters, we can point shoot stuff often out to 25 meters if we had to.
Sure.
So I can kind of get around that with James Bond, but like, I don't know, man. Speaking of James Bond, my favorite Bond movie of all time is Goldfinger. It had the classic Sean Connery in it. It was filmed in Fort Knox, Kentucky with all the gold reservoirs. And that's pretty close to where I grew up from, so of course I'm going to love it. It also had the best Bond villain of all time, Arik Goldfinger. And Arik Goldfinger, he understood that gold stands the test of time. When you look at our economy today, it's pretty clear that our financial systems are failing, so it's a really good idea to kind of diversify your assets. So if you're looking to get gold, silver, or other precious metals, you should check out Allegiance Gold. They have the highest ratings compared to all of their competitors. And you can go to protectwithdc.com to earn up to $5,000 in silver with qualifying purchases. You can also call 844-790-9191 and ask them any kind of question, get some help figuring out exactly what you should get and what you should buy to diversify your assets. So gold, we all know as soon as we got off the gold standard, things went downhill. Check them out. That's 844-790-9191 or protectwithdc.com. The second thing.
Yes.
This goes back to your first question. Am I more invested if the gunplay and the gear is correct? SEAL Team is a great example.
Oh.
Was it CBS?
Yes.
Something like that?
Yeah.
So I never got into that because I saw like one episode. I watched a little bit of the acting. I was like, not. Like,
oh, sure.
Whatever. But then you're like, no, dude, you need to go back and watch it. Check out the gunplay. Like, we talked a lot about Tyler Gray and his influence on that show. That's an understatement.
Right.
Like he is that show.
Someone has to. That TV show is, for people who know what they're looking at, sets the bar so much higher
mm-hmm.
that when I first saw it, I was aware of who Tyler Gray was only because of, I think he was like an American gunfighter for BCM back when they were mm-hmm. doing that thing. But I never knew that he was involved in Hollywood to any degree. So when I saw that TV show, immediately I was like, okay, I'm pulling up IMDb. Who's involved in this?
Mm-hmm.
Who's responsible for this? Because this is amazing.
Yeah.
And I can agree that some of the acting, it has come a long way. Some of those guys, when they first started, were a little bit young. Yeah, of course.
It's like, it's not going to be perfect.
That being said, the gunplay, the gear, even stuff like the SEALs are not wearing Desert Marpat.
Mm-hmm.
They're actually wearing AOR-1. And it is so subtle. They're both digital style. Mm-hmm. They're both tans and browns. But if you know what you're looking at, it's like, yeah, there's no anchors and eagles on that apparel. That it's, again, it set the bar so high above that, yeah, Tyler Gray must be the one doing it.
Yeah. So that show is a great example of a show that I didn't really care about the story of it.
Mm.
But the attention to detail made me respect it. And, you know, then I, you know, went home, downloaded every single season. I hate network TV shows because they're like 22 episodes for a season. Gosh, I hate that. I can't stand it. I like very concise storylines. I don't like fluff. But when the fluff is awesome action,
yeah,
that's like probably, I'd say 95-98%. Like the gear looks good. The tactics look good. Coming from a civilian that just LARPs. Everything looks like solid. Okay, I'm bought in. And I would much rather watch SEAL Team with like a 10 out of 10 attention to detail in terms of what's going on and, you know, an 8 out of 10 in the acting. I'd much rather watch that than, you know, some just big budget,
with
cool
an incredible storyline with amazing acting, but you get removed because the optic is mounted backwards
yes.
or someone can't actually hold a gun properly or whatever
yeah.
else.
Yeah.
No time to die. Which is very telling.
Well, he had time to die.
Of course he did.
So.
Yeah. He also wasn't 007 in that one.
That's right.
Which is, I think, why they had the liberty for him to actually die.
Yeah.
Because 007 has never been killed.
We need to have a full James Bond episode. We bring in Commando Bond.
Yes.
That dude on Instagram.
Yes.
And I'll bring in my Bond trivia set, which I have from 2001, so it's not current.
I'll read the cards. You answer.
Because
I couldn't
beat me.
Okay, good.
He'll beat me.
I couldn't answer.
Who's your favorite Bond?
Daniel Craig.
Okay, who's your second favorite Bond?
Daniel Craig. No.
Do you know the other Bonds?
I don't know all of them.
Okay, who's the first one?
I don't know.
You got to know the first Bond.
Is it...
Welcome to the Rock.
Yeah, him. What's his name?
Sean Connery.
Sean Connery.
Did you know there's a theory that Sean Connery in The Rock is James Bond?
I did hear that.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
To everyone listening or watching, you need to go look that up on YouTube. It's pretty interesting. I don't think it's real, but yeah.
It's a cool theory.
Yeah. Anyways, I'll let you get back to it.
Oh, so. If you haven't caught on yet, we're really just talking about the power of media or content as a whole, books, video games, social media, and we've talked about this in some other podcasts, but it's kind of interesting to dedicate like some key pieces of content. So starting with, you know, you already moved to 007 as a whole. That's fantastic. Now here's a book that a lot of people are unaware of, but I know you and I have both read this book, A Handful of Hard Men.
Okay. I've said for the longest time that book was written before thinking about what people were going to think about was a thing.
Of course.
How do you name a book A Handful of Hard Men? If you were to release that today, you're just like, oh, just Google search it.
Game over, man. Shreds.
Yeah.
What do you know about Rhodesia?
Oh, man, we're going to get spicy.
Mm.
We're going to get spicy. I know a little bit about Rhodesia.
How did you first hear about Rhodesia? Was it in high school? Was it junior high?
It was in Blood Diamond.
Oh,
okay. So when I watched Blood Diamond.
Okay.
Yeah.
What do you know about that storyline and
well,
how people feel about it?
It's very controversial.
Sure.
But essentially, how far back do you want me to... No, I'm not going to get into the details because I know I'll mess up some of the details.
Sure.
But essentially, it is now Zimbabwe.
Right.
And much of what Rhodesia was supposed to be... When Rhodesia was Rhodesia,
mm-hmm.
everyone prospered. Blacks, whites, the natives, everyone prospered. Though the power was within the whites. And internationally at the time, there was a lot of pressure and the whole like woke, people think we're woke now. Well, it didn't just start now. A lot of it started decades ago. And so there's a lot of international pressure to... like on that leadership. And there were, I can't remember the guy's name, but he was basically like the head honcho in Rhodesia. And he certainly made some comments that, are pretty damning,
sure,
to be honest. But, essentially they were ran out, and I believe it was, 1981 is when the last Sela Scouts were kind of like disbanded.
Yep.
I forget which year Rhodesia was actually like not a thing anymore, late 70s, something like that. But
Remember right, it was a bunch of British soldiers.
Yeah, SAS.
Right.
Yeah.
Who just simply wanted to step away and go do their own thing. And they were tired of their government taking from them. They mm-hmm. wanted to take their families and start their own thing,
mm-hmm.
which is essentially what, you know, we did here in America a lot longer ago.
Yep.
And and they found a location and they wanted to thrive. And they did thrive
mm-hmm.
Because they had the freedom to do so. But of course, you know, whenever a good thing happens, the government wants to step in and take it and tax it and so on and so forth. And I as well don't know 100% of the storyline, but that kind of story, I learned none of in either homeschool education or public school education or private school education, because I had some of all three of those.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of stuff that I learn by hopping on social media, learning about the camo pattern.
Rhodesian brushstroke.
Exactly.
Still one of the best.
Right.
Yeah.
And then being interested enough that I'm like, I'm going to go figure this out. Finding a book, concluding, I don't know if I should let anyone know that I'm reading A Handful of Hard Men, but but yeah, dive into the book and then self-educate through the power of, it's not necessarily media, but it is a book.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so that's kind of an interesting one.
Do you want a Rhodesia story?
Okay.
Okay, so many years ago, it wasn't that many years ago. It was like 5 or 6 years ago. So I was doing a print-on-demand t-shirt thing just to make cool designs. I had a ton of companies sending me like shirts and swag and caps. And to be honest, I was like, eh. Not really something I wear. Thank you for sending it.
Yes.
And I give it to a friend, or like I'd always give it away just because it's just like, I'm not going to wear that. So I was like, I might as well start making clothes that I want to wear. And if someone else wants to buy them, awesome. But that was the purpose. I was like, I'm going to make some designs that I want to wear. And one of them was like a Rhodesian brushstroke pattern. It was just like, just Rhodesian brushstroke. And then underneath it, it said Rhodesian.
I brought one of those shirts.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's right. You did.
Yeah.
Print on demand services are super woke, and they will, all it takes is one person to report you too.
Oh no.
And so that design got reported as being racist.
You're kidding.
No, did I tell you this story?
No.
Okay. So this is good. So get this. So he got reported as being racist. My entire account got shut down. They took all the funds that were in my account, which was like several thousand dollars at the time, and just weren't going to pay me out for it. They went ahead and shipped out the rest of the orders, but like kept all the money and sent me an email. It was just like, hey, this is what we're doing. And so I emailed back and was like, what's the problem? And they basically said that this is tied with like white supremacy and racist ideology, and we don't support that on this platform. And so the camo pattern. Yes. So I was like, here we go. And so I went, because, okay, so the Rhodesian brushstroke pattern is actually still in use by the Zimbabwean army.
Mm.
It's just called something different. So I found this picture that I knew was just undeniable. I found a picture of an all-female, all, like, black female Zimbabwean army unit.
Oh, get them.
From head to toe in Rhodesian camo, took a screenshot of it, sent it back and said, I saved the email. I should pull it up at some point, or I saved the screenshot of it and wrote something along the lines of, oh, I'm really sorry to hear that. If you'd be open to hear a little bit about what this camo pattern represents, I'd be happy to tell you, because it's currently still in use in Zimbabwe, which is like 99%, African, or sorry, yeah, like,
sure.
Like it's 99% black. So I didn't know that. It was Printful. I didn't know that Printful had a policy that didn't want camo patterns that black people use in Zimbabwe to be on their platform, even like all female units like this. So I basically put the ball back in their court.
Played their game.
And within 5 minutes, I got two emails back, one from the service rep and one from her boss, both like adamantly apologizing, reinstating my entire account, giving me all my money back.
Oh my god. It was great, dude.
It was great.
We can play that game too.
Dude, there are a few things that like that's probably like a I know it sounds silly, but that is one of those top 10. Like I will never forget that interaction because it's just like I won the woke war. Like, you know what I mean? It's
in
just
your
like
own world,
right back
you
in your face.
Him.
Yeah. Like tell me Rhodesian brushstroke, the camo pattern
is racist,
and I'm going to slide across the table a picture of an all-female, all-black, modern-day Zimbabwean army photo, head-to-toe clad in Rhodesian brushstroke, and play your game.
My gosh. That's incredible. Yep, sipping your tea, pinky up. Oh, my gosh.
I think whenever this goes live, we should publish that email.
Yeah, we should throw that on there.
We'll send it to our Patreon subscribers.
Perfect. Yeah.
So Patreon guys, if you're listening to this, I'll send you a picture of the screenshot of that email chain, and it's good.
I'm looking forward to seeing it myself. Okay, next one. The movie Heat.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
Val Kilmer.
So, go ahead.
We're probably going to say the same thing. Were you going to say that the bounding scene... Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
and the reloading scene.
Oh, was that also used? So for those of you that don't know, the bounding scene in Heat, right after they get out of the bank, they have money in their duffel bags over their shoulder. They're running their Galils and their ARs and whatever else. They actually bound on screen past cars so well that scene was used for... So the movie came out in 95. I don't know how long it was used for. In fact, it may still be used to some degree, but... They use that scene in the army to teach bounding
mm-hmm.
because it's such a good representation of one guy moving, one guy shooting. He stops, he turns, he shoots. The other guy starts moving. They're communicating well, but reloading as well.
The reloading is last time I heard the mm-hmm. reloading scene where Val Kilmer, his name in the movie is Chris Chehurlis. And I think that Heat 2 should talk about what happened to Chris Chehurlis. And I think he should have caught around to the throat because Val Kilmer currently can't talk. and it's him in his old age, and like I think it'd be kind of cool.
That would be cool.
If is he? He's still alive.
He is still alive. Okay. Yeah.
For now, so they better hurry up on that.
I know.
Dude, he's a legend. I love Val Kilmer. He's
incredible.
Great. But anyways, yeah. So the reloading scene, I believe, is still used as a reference in the Marine Corps.
Oh, interesting.
I think so. Well, at least it was at one point.
I appreciate. So, not only do I not. So not only do I appreciate when someone stays true to, you know, the gunplay. For example, if someone does a tac mag, they're doing it properly, or they're storing the extra magazine on body, mm-hmm. or when they go to reload, do you actually see the bolt locked mm-hmm. to the rear? Little stuff like that. If a magazine gets stuck, does someone know to strip the magazine out and then how to feed a new magazine into a simple stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I've also seen stuff where I can't remember what movie it was, but someone was reloading an AR and then the next shot, someone was reloading an AK. And the actor slapped the left side of the AK as if to drop the bolt release on the AK. It's stupid stuff like that.
So I did have an AK, and you could hit it anywhere, and the bolt would drop. Like, you could pull the bolt back, and it would actually kind of
stay a little bit. Stay.
Yeah. And then, like, the jostling of putting the mag in would drop it. So you had to nail it the first time, just like, wah.
But it would do it for you.
Yeah, which I don't think was intended.
Design. But. Okay, but my point is... not only do I appreciate when they do things well, I actually will catch myself be pulled into the storyline even more because I know what I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. I appreciate when someone has that attention to detail, which means if there's a rock climbing scene or if there's a parasailing scene, whatever it is, something I don't know anything about, dude, I buy into it. Mm-hmm. And I believe, well, man, if they got the gun thing right, they probably are paying attention to the other parts of this movie. And so I will catch myself, Tom Clancy movie or what, doesn't matter what it is. If there's good gunplay, immediately I'm hooked, mm-hmm. and I will watch the rest of it as if it's gospel truth.
Yeah.
They can get away with it that way. You guys, as we talk about people in media, whether it's video games or movies, doing things incorrectly on screen, we also have to be advocates for doing things properly. And the best way to do that is by getting good reps with dry fire. Well, there's some downsides with dry fire that can be overcome with iTarget Pro. iTarget Pro has a couple different tools that we can use, one of which is a laser bullet that goes into your chamber, and every time you pull the trigger, a laser comes out and it actually shows you where your rounds would have impacted. If you guys are interested in some of this stuff, as well as their targets that will show you your consistency and accuracy, go to itargetpro.com. We have a discount code. It's DIRTY, D-I-R-T-Y, all caps, and it will save you 10%. Again, itargetpro.com. Use the discount code DIRTY for some really good dry fire training tools. I've used them for a long time, and I really do like that product.
Well, and I think so many filmmakers, they want to take these shortcuts because they think it doesn't matter. And they're right in a way that most people are not going to notice. But when you create something and your attention to detail is so high, essentially what you've created is a bar for excellence. You've made something excellent. And whether they know what they're looking at or not, they can almost kind of feel it, if that makes sense. Yeah. They can feel that this is legit. There's just something innate in your bones. When you see that stuff, it's just like, it's kind of undeniable. And so when I see movies that are so heavy on special effects that it becomes, I'm not like explosion and stuff like that. Like, I understand you can't always blow everything up. You may not have the budget for it and all that stuff. But whenever I see gunplay and the guns like are overtly not guns, they're not firing. I've literally turned off movies because I don't care and I don't respect that work.
Me too.
It's just like, especially if you have like millions of dollars in budget and you can't figure out that one little detail, it's not that hard. You and me do it for free.
Right.
You know, people on Instagram do this for free.
Right.
And you can't figure out how to make it work with millions of dollars in your back pocket. No, thanks, man. Right. I'm not interested. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to watch your movie.
And it's easy to
hire. I'll do it out of principle. I'm that vindictive towards filmmakers in that I won't watch the rest of your movie and I won't recommend it because you cheaped out. Because you thought it didn't matter.
I agree. And to that point, I think there's enough content out there, movies, YouTube videos, even video games, where the people on screen are good. They've been directed. They've been coached. Maybe they've even had offline training before they started filming. John Wick, perfect example. Keanu Reeves actually goes and does jiu-jitsu for months. Mm-hmm. In fact, he's probably keeping it up, you know, for all of the other content that he's doing. Same with guns. The point is, there's so much good content out there that I would wager a bet that the average individual who doesn't know that much about firearms, who doesn't know that much about proper sizing or fitment for a plate carrier, can watch another video, YouTube video, movie, whatever, and recognize they're not holding that pistol right.
Yeah.
They can already tell because...
they look sloppy.
Yes. It's already been broken in the correct direction to mm-hmm. where if anyone doesn't pay attention, they will lose audience members immediately.
Yeah, and it's also a matter of what kind of influence do you want to have on people. And I understand that a lot of filmmakers don't live this life. They don't understand it. They just want to make a cool action movie, and there's nothing wrong with that. Like, I get that. But to the ones that know, when you put out a product, which is a movie or a film or a video game or whatever it is, when you know the difference between real and not, and you throw a character on screen that's wearing a plate carrier down here or something's not correct.
No plates in the bags.
Like, it's overt, like, you know, terrible holster. You let your actors get away with holding a gun like this. Like, anything, like, if you're allowing that to happen and you're a big budget filmmaker and you know better, you're acting in counter to what all the rest of us are doing. Because whether you know it or not, you've got influence and people are watching you and kids are watching your video and your movie and they're thinking that that's normal. They're thinking that that's right. And then someone else has to, down the road in their life, has to fix that. And we know the next generation is looking at movies and games and kind of adopting that into their understanding of firearms. Take Iron Sights, for example. Mm-hmm. You take any Call of Duty player that's 6 years old, and if you were to hand them like an airsoft gun and say, aim it, they're going to intuitively know to line up the front sight and those two and the two rears,
yep.
right?
Yep.
Or they're going to understand what a red dot looks like.
Right.
So we know that people catch on to this stuff.
Yeah.
And yet filmmakers will still cut corners because they think it doesn't matter.
Right.
And again, I can give a lot of grace to people who don't know better, but when you know better,
it's a shame.
And you're making a multi-million dollar film that's going to go on a big screen. Millions of people are going to watch.
Yeah.
Come on, bro.
Well, you know, Nick and I were actually talking about this earlier this morning, and he made a really good point. I would love to see a movie that has such good gunplay that the small city cop who is holding his Glock incorrectly, teacupping it or whatever it is intentional.
And that's the thing. So I completely and that's agree.
The guy who's wearing his plate carrier sloppy, the individuals uh-huh. who are, you know, his boots aren't polished and whatever else. And on top of that, he can't control the recoil on his Glock and he can't hit anything.
Yes.
That, like, That's accurate. Where it's now. Yes, that's now where it starts to become realistic in that, oh no, you do have these other individuals who are squared away. They move with their stuff very, very well. In fact, what was that? 13 Hours. Mm-hmm. So you have all these individuals, fantastic movie for multiple reasons, but they have an interpreter who comes aboard and his helmet, very clearly, someone can see he's wearing like an MCH or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Too big for him. He doesn't have his chin strap squared away properly. His plate carrier is kind of fallen off of him. He's waving his gun around, and there's that scene where he flags one of the other guys.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, whoa, man, like, you know, he may not make it back from being the QRF to try to go help another team.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Because it then also demonstrates we do know how to give good gunplay into this movie, but we are also, for character development, going to intentionally have one person who doesn't know exactly what's going on.
Yeah.
So yes, there is a time and a place.
Absolutely.
For incorrect and unsafe and whatever else gunplay, because the moment when a six-year-old, I'm probably not watching 13 hours, the moment when a 13-year-old who doesn't have a father, who doesn't have an uncle, who doesn't have a big brother helping them with firearms, watches the scene where someone flags someone else, and one of the good guys goes, hey man, in a way, hey man, that's not okay, pushes his gun out of the way and is like, don't do that. That is a learning moment. Mm-hmm. The power of the visual where someone gets corrected and everyone else goes, well, that's the cool guy. That's the guy who's proficient. That's the guy who's fit.
Yep.
That's the guy who's wearing all of his gear properly, corrects the other guy. Dude, that's a winning moment.
Which is one of the things I appreciate about what Tyler Gray has done with SEAL Team, mm-hmm. because in the first season when they're doing a lot of the team room stuff and they're going through the shoot house, and he flags someone he shouldn't have flagged, and he shoots a hostage. They're like, that's your one, like you get that correction, stuff like that. So it's
powerful.
It is. It's a shame that that's not more of a thing. But again, that's kind of what separates the good from the great. That's what separates a good movie from a great movie,
right?
You know, and people don't typically remember these flash in the pan action thrillers that cut corners. Like, I can remember movies because, like, you know, I'm ridiculous.
It's
like
what
that.
You do.
But take like the you know, the London Is Falling series, or like any of those kind of like quick cash grab movies. That they're fun. They're just meant to entertain. But no one's gonna remember them. Like, no one's ever going to remember Olympus Has Fallen.
No.
You know, or Has Fallen.
No.
Like, 10 years, no one cares. But in another 20 years, people will still be talking about Heat.
Right. Or American Sniper.
Mm-hmm.
Or any of those other movies.
Probably Terminal List, to be honest. Like, it was so well done. But going back to the realism of it. Okay, so Invasion. Most people probably haven't seen that show. It's not super popular. It's on... it's on Apple TV.
Right.
Invasion is I thought it was actually probably a pretty good mix. There was so you have like Navy SEALs. Well, were they SEALs or was it just like a tier one unit?
They were a tier one to some degree.
Tier one unit. And they actually did a decent job. Their kit was like decent for the time period. And keep in mind, like a lot of these like tier one guys 15 years ago, now they're running things entirely different because of the things that they learned. And at the time, that was advanced, right? So as long as it's like period correct and character correct to a reasonable degree, I'm okay with it.
Right.
Whereas, you know, you have Saving Private Ryan and dudes flagging each other left and right. But again,
it's also period correct.
And you're in the middle of a war zone and it's total chaos. And it's not like you have a team of four guys and you only have four muzzles to deal with. You have, you know, 2,000 people. Yeah. And, you know, those soldiers were trained up. They were drafted, trained up, and literally shipped overseas. It's like, you think they're going to be tier one operators in World War II on the beaches of Normandy? Like, no. So it's just like, it's all just about, okay, what's the environment? Who are the people? What's the storyline? If it matches, I'm good.
Right. Okay. Well, we've named a few, and you have mentioned over the years, I've been aware of the fact that 007, you know, really played a heavy hand in you growing in this industry and your love for media and such. Before we wrap up, what other content, whether it's books, video games, movies, have influenced you and your, dude, I don't know, maybe, interest in specific firearms or interest in, I don't know, you played a lot of paintball, but did you ever play a video game and then think to yourself, I wonder if I could do that in real life?
Oh yeah. So, honestly, probably Ready or Not.
Oh.
But only for very specific things. And it's just a video game. There's only so much you can learn. But you can take a lot of CQB doctrine or just teamwork. Just teamwork, good general practices, and apply it in that game. and really figure out, did that work, did it not? And then take what you've learned, move it over to a Milsim event. Did it work? Did it not? And then take that and explain that to a guy who's been there and done that for real and be like, hey, this was our experience. We figured it out in this video game. We went and we tested it out in this somewhat real world environment in Milsim. Does that match up with what you've like learned over your years of experience? And they're like, yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense. Like our whole near peer IR white light experience. Man. Like we figured that out on the fly on an airsoft field and then went and bounced that situation and how we handled it off of some dude who's actually been in a fight with
nods and white light
And they're like, oh yeah, absolutely. Like you handled that textbook. And it was just like, sweet.
Thank goodness. Yeah. 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 Anyways,
so I think Ready or Not is probably the coolest one.
Okay. That makes sense. Yeah, I need to play that a little bit more. Actually, I've never played that. I guess I need to play it some.
Should.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, anything else on your mind, media-wise, or content that's heavily influenced our industry?
Not really.
Well, I think that wraps up our Monday morning podcast.
Yeah. I would just say demand people be better. When you watch a movie or you watch something on YouTube, you know, we know that whenever we post an Instagram reel, if it's not perfect, it's going to get raked over the coals. And to a degree, I kind of appreciate that, though it is also like a man in the arena kind of thing. We're raked over the coals on CQB by 99% of people who have never done CQB, just like us.
Sure.
And that's totally fine. But especially when it comes to movies, like, put filmmakers to the test. Like, poke them in the eye if they do something wrong. Like, make them aware that they've dropped the ball. I think we kind of do that with our money, you know, and just, like, not watching it or not recommending it. And when people get it right, talk about it. And that's one of the things I really liked about Terminalist is that when they got it right, dude, the fans were sounding off in the comments, in the reviews, in the Rotten Tomatoes reviews. Like, people understood it, dude, and they patted them on the back for it. The opening scene, get rewarded.
That opening scene, the first episode, Terminalist, when they're in the cave, fantastic. Mm-hmm. And it did not go copy-paste to the book, but that was a scene that I was like, this is incredible. They nailed it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and one final thing that drives me crazy, and we'll just leave it at this, so now everyone else can notice this in movies and it drive them crazy also, are these high-cut ballistic helmets that never have ear pro.
Oh, yes.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Like, that's one of the points is to be able to have, like, better and, like, a lighter helmet, more high speed, and you have these operators running around in these high-cut helmets with literally no ear pro whatsoever. I understand there's a time and place for that, but for the most part, that's ridiculous.
It is.
And also their helmets are, like, perfectly clean. They've never, like, touched the ground. They've never been hit by a rock. They've never brushed past a tree. It's the Steven Spielberg effect. The older he gets, the more polished his movies are, and they just look like a Broadway play and not an actual environment.
I've never noticed that.
It drives me crazy whenever I watch these movies, and the characters, their gear, their equipment don't look lived in.
Did he do the most recent Indiana Jones as well?
Yeah.
Okay, I still haven't seen
it. I just pirated it. It was garbage.
Okay, yeah, I kind of would have guessed.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, that makes sense. If you go back and watch Saving Private Ryan or any of the original Indiana Jones, it was dirty. It was gritty. Rough. Gritty. Yeah, that's the right word for it. Yeah. And that's interesting.
That's not a thing. I just made that up. Huh. I don't know if other people agree with that or not.
It's a thing now.
I always call it the Spielberg effect. It's like the longer you go, the higher your production value goes. And the more money you can spend on things, the more authentic you can make them look, or you know, you can get the actual uniforms, you can get the actual guns, but then you just like you don't distress anything, you don't make anything look lived in. You've went from the trenches to, you know, your ivory tower, and it looks the part, and I hate it.
Well, when you're short on money and you don't have the perfect film location, and you know the sun is setting and you have to get the final shot, you're willing to dive into the dirt and do something messy in order to get it right, which honestly feels realistic.
Yeah. Did you watch The Covenant? Yeah. Guy Ritchie's The Covenant.
Yeah.
I actually love that movie. I love the storyline. I thought it had a really good message and everything. I thought Jake Gyllenhaal was actually excellent in it.
Yep.
But again, you have these guys running, like not all of them, but some of them, it's like they have this brand new, fresh out of the box that they just ordered, the prop master just ordered, put it on his head. There's no ear pro, chin strap's not fastened, and I'm looking at Nick because he's just like over here smiling at me, and I'm just like,
no,
lame.
Can't, yeah.
Dumb.
Takes you out of the...
Who's advising on that?
Right.
Who let that slide?
Right.
Because you suck at your job. I'm sorry. You suck at your job.
Well, and it's funny because you could grab...
any Instagram keyboard warrior.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
They're going to do it better.
Yep. You could grab any airsofter. You could grab any Instagram.
Dude, the airsofters.
They get it. They get it right, man.
They get it right.
They do. Yep. Which is, they spend a lot of money on getting it right, which is wild. But they go full immersion. And any one of those kids who maybe did or did not actually join the military could probably advise on a movie and crank out some pretty serious gunplay, CQB actions. The kit, the everything,
yeah.
And make it really freaking good.
Dude, you take Greg Wong.
Oh,
you just pick him up.
Gosh, dude.
Or even like any of these airsofters or any of their minions who follow them,
right.
You pick them up and you place them in one of these Hollywood big budget films. You pay him $20,000 for like 2 weeks of work, whatever, like cheap. They would probably do it for free. You pick them up, you drop them on one of these sets, you have them advise, and I guarantee you, in most of these Hollywood films, you get a better, more realistic final product.
Two things with that. One, you mentioned they'd probably do it for free. I agree. You know why?
Because they love it.
Because they're passionate about it, and that's the exact same reason as to why they would produce something better, not produce a movie, but actually provide a better product at the end of the day, because they genuinely care about it.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that people who advise on movies who are trying to give guns and gear and gadgets and movements, not that they don't care about it, but there's something about making $500,000 in 6 months that suddenly starts to become like, well, I'm getting paid no matter what. Mm-hmm. If I can do the bare minimum and get away with it, and I'm not passionate about it, dude, yeah, it's no wonder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a shame.
Well...
Good chat.
That was pretty good, man.
I like that topic.
We actually have a lot more content that we have to get today, so we should wrap this thing up. Guys, thank you for listening. Those of you who have stuck around at the end here, we appreciate you guys. If you guys do want to support us in your own special way, Patreon helps. You can also share this content. Hop on YouTube. Share it to a friend. Mention it to a loved one, a family member, whatever the case is. Those of you who are faithful followers and sponsors and supporters, we are very thankful. We appreciate you guys. Nick, thanks for being here, dude. Let's go crush some more content.
Yeah.
Right on.
Should do a hair dyeing video with Nick.